Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Glenn, who is here to speak with us about his experience of participating in the recent year practice retreat. Welcome, Glenn.
Thanks. Hi, Jen.
Hey. You're something of a veteran now of the experience.
Well, that's a high compliment coming from you. I think this is my fifth retreat, so it's, you know, I'm just starting to get warmed up, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Ditto.
I kind of had that thought. It's just going to pretty much be like this all the time, isn't it?
I think it is, and I think it's funny you really evoked that in me as you said that, made that first comment, because what I saw, what flashed through was, and that, I think, is the beauty of coming together in the ways that we do. We're in another retreat right now, and I just thought, gosh, it's endless, the different combinations of people and ways that we look at things and curriculum and the time of the year and where we are and what's going on for me in my own practice. It's endless what we can put together to get just a slightly different view on things, and each kind of group of people who comes to the monastery allows us to see this whole other way. So it's really pretty fun.
Absolutely, and I've always wondered, because, you know, I don't have privilege to what goes on behind the scenes, but I've imagined that after 35 years, you've got these retreats down to quite a science. But at the same time, I also imagine that you don't have to move any particular part to have a completely different experience every time. And
absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, I do know what you mean, and I'm projecting that part of why you're seeing that is that you've done a particular retreat a number of times.
Well, this last one was my second year practice retreat, and you're right, it was an entirely different experience, just like it's an entirely different experience every time. But I remember in that last week, somebody, I don't remember who, but somebody was saying that every retreat, it just gets better and better and better, and that has absolutely been my experience. I mean, it doesn't matter what the retreat is, it doesn't matter what the focus of the retreat is, everything is open to you as if you're open to it, and I mean, one thing I do remember from my first retreat was leaving with, or about to leave with a sense of dread about, you know, coming back to this world, and that has completely reversed. I was actually, you know, it's not that I wanted to leave the monastery, but I didn't have that same sense of dread and fear about, you know, facing the battleground of this world anymore. I felt very, not confident isn't exactly the right word, but it didn't scare me. And that was a pretty amazing thing to feel.
Yes. So it didn't scare you when you considered leaving the monastery, leaving that particular environment. It didn't scare you to consider coming back and practicing in your everyday life.
Right. And at the end of the first retreat, I very distinctly, in fact, I think I brought it up in the last group, was I'm terrified to go back to this world. And I remember saying I'm terrified to go back to the real world. And I was very quickly reminded that the real world was right where we were sitting. And this world out here is something completely another thing altogether.
Well, and that's profound, isn't it? Because the real world is where I am in any given moment. And that unreal world, that imaginary world, which is where suffering lives, is up in the conversation, not here.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, in a way, there's a wisdom in being afraid of it because it's a scary place to live. You're pointing at is you're increasingly learning you don't have to live there. No matter where your body is, no matter where you are at any given time, it's possible to be here.
You know, the one thing that I've kind of just characterized for myself, because I find it helpful, is I feel like the more I practice and the more I come on retreat and the more I read and the more I record and listen, the more I'm building up my arsenal against EKC. And that's something that I never had before coming to practice. And I think that's why I floundered and was constantly, you know, bamboozled. And it's not that I don't get bamboozled anymore, but I feel like when I do, and when I can bring some awareness to what's happening, I have somewhere to turn. You know, I have something I can open my war chest of practice tools and pull something out, and 100% of the time so far it's successful in bringing me out of, you know, whatever state I've gotten into, and that too, it's just it's an amazing feeling, you know?
Yes, and I know for me there's that place where it's that confidence that you said before. You said it's sort of confidence isn't quite the word, but it is in a way a confidence, isn't it, that what that having that tool chest allows me to have is that I can rest in the experience of well-being. I can rest in okayness, knowing that when I do get pulled into something, that's all right, because I have all of these tools at my disposal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just the simplest thing. You know, it's just, I have an imaginary bracelet that says, "What would practice have me do?" And I just have to look at my wrist, and it always comes up with an answer, you know, and the answer might just be, don't do anything. Or the answer might be just go take a walk, or, you know, it can be the simplest little thing, but I feel like it's coming from somewhere solid now. Whereas before I just didn't have that same sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to say one thing if I can about recording and listening, because one definite transformational experience I had on this last retreat was, I mean, I was one of these people who have dug my heels in from the beginning about recording and listening, and I haven't done it, and I've convinced myself in a hundred different ways that I don't need to do it and that I don't want to do it and that it's okay for some people but not for me, and I don't even know if it works that well, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I've always had a sense that, you know, Sherry wouldn't be telling me this if it was, you know, a load of pucky.
She talks about it an awful lot.
She does talk about it a lot. And so I just tried to I didn't try to, you know, sell myself on it right away. I just tried to be open to it for a change, you know. Of course, the right thing dropped in. I don't even know who it was. I don't even know if it was a guide or facilitator or retreatant, but somebody said exactly what needed to be said, and I don't even know exactly what it was, but it hit me at the right time, in the right moment, and it was basically something that, you know, recording and listening allows us to have the voices that we need, the voice of the mentor, with us all the time in greater and greater quality and frequency and variety, and it's there to turn to whenever you need it. And I know that I need it, and so I'm much more willing to turn to that as a tool and a resource, whereas before I wasn't. And I'm not saying I'm a great recording, you know, recorder and listener now, because I'm not yet, but I'm to the point where I'm ready to start embracing it, and that's exciting to me.
Wow, and that whole process is just so incredible, isn't it? Because it's really the same.
Go ahead.
I was just going to reflect that it's the same process I think you were describing, where there's that growing confidence and there's that growing your own experience of it. And I think you articulated so well that what we get to see when we have an experience like that is all of that resistance. It's not me really necessarily, you know, resisting recording, listening. But we can see why there's such a strong campaign once we have the direct experience of it. And then, as you say, now it's a practice, and now you've opened that door, and now you get to have your own experience of building that muscle.
And to watch that resistance just kind of evaporate, and what that opens up in its place is incredible.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
You know, just
that we don't even really.
Yeah, I mean, I can do anything I want with that space now. You know, with where it was just pure resistance before, I can choose to do something, you know, really positive and for the person with that, rather than listening to this badgering about how I shouldn't be recording and listening. And it's wonderful.
It is wonderful because then in the first scenario, then I'm kind of recording because I should, and I'm a bad person if I don't, and But in the second one, I get to have my own adventure with it. Just get to see. So anything else about your practice retreat in particular that you would point at, Glenn, that you benefited from?
Yeah, every single thing. I mean, I when we were in the last group, I mean, that was the question, is pick your favorite. And I think everybody around the room had at least, you know, at least five, and they were probably leaving 50 out. I mean, the more I thought about it, it was that there was nothing that didn't come up as an insight, and it didn't matter if it was sitting, you know, in guidance with Sherry, or if it was being given an instruction in the kitchen, or working or sitting or going to the bathroom or going to put your dishes away. Everything is just right there offering itself as an insight, and it's just up to me to turn to it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be some profound thing. And at the same time, even the little things feel like profound things. So I really felt like, you know, yeah, I could name some favorite ones, but the more I think about it, it's just the experience as a whole of just being open to the insights and being open to what the experience there of the retreat has to offer. And I feel like I can't go wrong. So,
yeah, exactly.
Very, so incredibly well supported.
Yeah, so well supported. And so, I mean, you listed a number of things that are part of that retreat that aren't necessarily part of all retreats. So, you know, we all get to participate in doing the dishes, and we all participate in chopping the carrots, and we all participate in weeding, and we all participate in, and in fact, in the retreat we're doing right now, all those folks are the beneficiaries of a property that looks much different than when your practice retreat folks arrived. So that was huge, what was accomplished in that week. Yeah.
Good.
And, you know, the other thing about it, Glenn, was that comment that you made earlier about, you know, behind the scenes, a couple of things dropped in. One was that this is the kind of retreat where we're all behind the scenes, really. You know, I mean, that's one of the fun things about it, is that we all roll up our sleeves and get in there and work together. And I think, I mean, in that last group, as you say, all those insights that everyone had, and I'm sure you were with me in that every single thing everyone said, oh, yeah, that one, oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, right.
But one of them being to get to do working meditation alongside the guide. I mean, that's an extraordinary experience.
And even that, I remember, I mean, I had the privilege of doing that as well, and I thought, oh, is this a normal thing? Is this unusual? I mean, I have no idea because, again, I'm not there all the time like you are, but I quickly just got out of that little conversation and just purely, you know, soaked it up. I thought, I don't care if I never get to do this again. I'm so happy to be doing this right now, and so it's a true honor.
Yeah, it really is a true honor, a true honor. Yeah,
I'm sure I'm not the first person to have said this, but it's always, you know, you never know when you're sitting facing the wall what voice you're going to hear to ask you to turn around and face this way. And it's not that I'm, you know, not completely happy to hear anybody's voice, but there is definitely this incredibly special thing when you hear Sherry's voice say, you know, please turn around and face this way.
It really
gets you stirred up.
You take me back to my very first retreat with that. Yep, I can go right there. Amen. Yeah, I think it's just an embodiment of how, and I think Sherry would say the exact same thing, how lucky we all are to have this, to have stumbled upon this teaching, this sangha. So,
when I think about all the possibilities of how it could have just, you know, passed it by, I'm so grateful. And at the end of the day, at the end of the retreat, at the end of every day, that's where I end up, is just incredible gratitude.
And, you know, one of the places that takes me as we close is just, and we said this in that retreat, why aren't we so lucky that there are people who, you know, there aren't thousands of us sitting in that room, but there are people who want to come and do this and who want to spend their time this way and who care about the same things we do. So it's such an honor and a pleasure to all get to practice in that way together.
Yeah. Sitting there pulling weeds, I was thinking about a coworker of mine who happened to be in Italy at the same time and, you know, just doing wonderful things and seeing wonderful sights. And I just thought about it for a moment, and I thought, this is exactly where I want to be. I don't want to be anywhere else.
Yes.
And kept pulling weeds.
Yes, exactly. Oh, gosh. There it is. And that is something we can take with us into every moment of life. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much, Glenn,
for being
with us this afternoon.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Really, really great.
Very much a pleasure. Thank
you. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, take good care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Glenn. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I was just going to say, you know, this is not one of those occasions where we're going to hear Sherry's voice and get really stirred up, because she is doing guidance at a retreat right now. So
yes,
we'll just hold her in our hearts.
Yes. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get just as stirred up having you here. So this would be great.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Yes. You know, given that we're all responsible for our own practice and our own enthusiasm
and our own experience.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And can I comment about the conversation with Jen and Glenn?
Oh, please. Oh, please. It was so inspiring. Can't wait to hear what you have to say.
It was very inspiring. And there are a lot of things I could say. And one of the things that came to mind is that I've been doing practice for a few years now, and there can be a sense of sort of taking it for granted that, you know, this is what I do. And of course, that misses the wonder and the miracle that practice is and that I've received from all that. And listening to Glenn was like sort of a refresh of taking me back to that place of gratitude for all that practice offers and all of the experiences that I've received. And it's great.
Yeah, what I hear you saying that, right, Michael, is that that there's a way in which our enthusiasm for practice is embodied in how we show up for it on a day-to-day basis. And that when that enthusiasm is reflected slightly differently, we recognize how enthusiastic we are. So it's not like there's no joy in the showing up on the taking granted experience. It's just that we're not aware of that. We're not aware of that level of enthusiasm. But as soon as we hear it, we feel it in ourselves again, right? There's a resonance.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's always inspiring to hear people talk about how fulfilled they feel because it takes us to that place.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's my experience. That's my experience.
Yeah.
Shall I jump into announcements?
Yes, please.
Okay. The powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat is a chance for participants to see directly how we are rejected and punished by the voices of self-hate and to discover how to let that go. This foundational work is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. Three retreats will be held this summer at the monastery, June 23rd through 30th, July 7th through 14th, and July 28th through August 4th. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini, you can press *6 and then 1. To make guest show, and a focus on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great. Okay, ready, Ashwini?
Yes, I am.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. This is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, can you hear me okay? I haven't got this new Wi-Fi system. Is it okay?
Loud and clear.
Loud and clear. Excellent. Yeah, I went right there during Good News Update. I've had several opportunities to go to the monastery and be a visiting monk and participate in that way. And it was listening to so many Sangha members talk about it before I actually went for the very first time. That inspired me to break through that giant wall of resistance that I hit every time I even consider it and apply and get invited and then go, and to hear folks' experiences of it takes me right back to the many times that I've had that opportunity. So very grateful.
You know, Todd. Yeah. Well, and if I may reflect, you know, it's like the voice of love calling us. Very faintly, and we look at all of these people and go, my God, what is going on for them? What is going on for them? And then, and slowly, the curiosity to have that experience for ourselves overcomes the resistance because right. we're so, it's like the siren call to come home.
Yeah.
You know, I know that experience. I can feel it in myself. And this is how, this is showing me the way. And part of going up against the resistance is wearing away mm-hmm. that what prevents us from being in that experience all the time. So the workshop starts even before you get on the property, right?
For
the
way before.
Way before, yeah.
Way before. Yeah. Way before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love the way you phrased that part about the curiosity builds and builds, because I, for so long in practice, had never, I've been in early practice to a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, but that is very, very different in my experience than the Visiting Monk program. The stakes mm-hmm. seem to be so much higher in a way that, you know, just initially committing to a month and really just the deepening practice experience of going and leaving the outside world and just immersing yourself into a schedule that you're not familiar with, and to just all the support, you know, the 3 times a day of meditation and then working meditation and guidance and group. And yeah, I was just so curious about hearing people's experience about it and saying, I gotta go. And you know, many years putting it off, and then that 1 year when I get, like you said, you know, the that still small voice, which is so really, really, it is small, mm-hmm. but it gently nudging, mm-hmm. and then to make that leap of faith and trust that mm-hmm. all that resistance is just what is keeping me away from the heart.
Yes, exactly. So all that resistance yeah. is just keeping me away from the heart. And
yeah.
then we go do it, have mm-hmm. our own experience
yeah.
and build. I project every time we go up against resistance, we are actually wearing out the groove of resistance. And so, you know, in every area of content where I feel like I want some experience that someone else is pointing to, but I don't have that experience and I'm resistant to having that experience,
mm-hmm.
that every time I choose my heart and actually act from that place, that the not just the resistance to that particular thing, but resistance
yeah.
in the largest process sense of the word
mm-hmm.
gets worn out. So it does become easier, you know,
yeah.
to overcome the resistance.
Exactly. You know, as you're saying that, what dropped in is every then, as you're right, you build that muscle of saying yes and accepting life's invitations, which I always kind of summarize as practice opportunities that the practice offers and the monastery offers. I just find myself just saying yes and then just, you know, see how that works out. But the first
That's
impulse
right.
now, instead of the no and then get through the resistance now, is yes and then just let conditioning fall wherever it does.
Exactly. And what the powerful part of that process, right, Todd, because the resistance keeps us from participating in life.
Yes.
So when we get past the resistance and say yes to life, what we start to get training on is exactly the place that Glenn was pointing us to,
mm-hmm.
our confidence in being present to whatever it is that's unfolding in life, and therefore
right.
being able to participate wholeheartedly in that with compassion is
yes.
the muscle that gets starts to build.
Yes.
Because if we're resistant and we don't participate, then we are never going to learn how to be present to how things are.
Yeah. Yeah, that is perfectly phrased. Absolutely. And yeah, just like you said, the participation part is what I see, hear so much in the last year's Project Joy year-long retreat, and this year's How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything, which I struggled with so long, is putting myself in the queue, that ability to just go, all right, I know, I've got tons of resistance, I got tons of sensations, I hear no. And the more I did it, the easier it got, and now it's just as simple, it seems, and as easy as logging on to
yes.
start meeting and just pressing the question mark. It's just, there's not even a conversation anymore about it. It's like, that's just what I do. And
yes,
same with open air.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
like today,
yeah.
it's just, I log in, the question mark comes up, I press it, and it says, you know, you are in the queue, or I forget how it's phrased, and that's exactly it. It's like, it's not even a conversation anymore about doing that.
Exactly. It's just pure willingness.
Pure willingness and pure, I guess, fulfilling the deepest desire of the heart to participate wholeheartedly with compassion.
Right. It's an embodiment of presence. It's being where you choose to live, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I love that embodiment.
It sounds like you need to come back to the monastery soon.
I do. I am going to thank you, Ashwini, for the nudge. A little more louder than this little small voice, but I do appreciate it. I need to come back. I it's on my calendar for this year. I will be sending an email to the guest master very shortly and requesting a stay. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Well, because in some way, you know, Todd, we so enjoy having people here in the same way as it's the siren call of love that signals you home.
Yes.
That it's also from that, I mean, metaphorically from life, life always wants you to be present and participating, right?
Yeah,
there's an
absolutely.
Enjoyment from
yes.
from having everyone you love in that place of love together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
absolutely.
I think I feel that every time I walk onto the property, that the monastery loves me as much as I love it. And that when I walk into the place, it greets me with
me
that
too.
Place of you belong here.
This is where you've
come home.
Yeah.
And
I'm
so glad to see you, and I missed you, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting tears. I'm tearing up because I'm just picturing that I've made the drive. I drive every time. It just seems that's the way it's gone. And I make that slow little 5-mile-an-hour drive down the, you know, the windy road down to the upper parking lot or down to the whatever, the big pine. And it's the same feeling I get every time. It's like, you're right. It's like, welcome home. We've missed you.
Yeah.
You know, glad you're here.
Yeah. And that beautiful, whoever it is, that monk that comes in and does gassho and shows you to where you have to go next. It's
yeah.
just the perfect closure, right?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Great.
My
well, thank you so much.
My heart and your heart are one. That's it,
absolutely.
Right? Gassho. Yeah.
So I guess I'll see you soon.
I look forward to it, Todd, and I'm sure the monastery does too.
Well, I put it out there now, so there's no backing out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you've ignited the siren.
Oh, great. Okay. Gassho. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Take care.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. Ashwini, one of the things I loved about that conversation was the emphasis on participation and showing up moment after moment after moment and committing to the next retreat or the next email class or the next visiting monk program and the benefits that accrue over time
mm-hmm.
in ways that are mostly invisible to me in the moment, but in retrospect, I can see.
Absolutely. Yeah, it becomes, as you said, right, in some way, it's phrased as, it's what I do, it's what I do, and it's what
yes.
I do becomes what I am, right?
Yes.
There's no question about that. It's absolutely authentic.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Great. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are
no
now
way.
Live. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Ellie in San Diego.
Hi, Ellie.
Hey.
I project you're happy to be here.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. I was literally jumping around dancing during that last call because it resonated so strongly for me.
Mm-hmm. 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 lit up to be a visiting monk, huh?
Well, yeah. Well, and that the whole thing about seeing in retrospect
mm-hmm.
and just the
mm-hmm.
shift that happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, seeing in retrospect the shifts that happen and how that gets carried through in our practice outside of the monastery, as Glenn was talking about.
Yeah. So it's just the whole thing. I've been looking at listening in the recording and listening practice, and it dropped in to just play with seeing how much listening I can do in a day, like how because there's this story that there's these times when I can't be listening, and I realized, well, is that really true?
Yes. And you're pointing to a very important process in practice, right? We are doing a practice of awareness. And so suddenly there's something that tells you you can only listen at certain times during the day. And you go, yeah, really? What? Who says so? And there's that spirit of curiosity that we're talking about. Let me find out if that's true. Let me have my own experience.
Exactly. And seeing how... I get talked out of putting the earbuds in, because I get distracted, or I'm told that, well, you need to focus your whole attention on this thing.
Yeah, and so you know, we often say this in practice. It's not about listening 24 hours a day. It's actually making the commitment and seeing how you're talked out of listening. Right? How you're talked out of, how does ego operate in order to control me? And seeing that allows for the transformation to happen.
Yeah, so seeing how I'm being controlled.
That's right.
Is the process that I'm kind of, and it feels like play, which is really fun.
Yes. Oh, and it's so important for play to be the attitude, right? Because if it's something you should be doing, it's really grim and there's really no fun in it. And so to make it a game and to have that attitude of playfulness and discovery and fun makes it so interesting.
Yeah. So for a while, before this, I was practicing with not... like only listening in, like when I was really present with the listening, and that was also really cool. And I don't know, it just feels like it's all just this process of learning and exploring and seeing what life has now.
Yes. So, you know, Ellie, what drops in when you say that is what we're trying to do, what we're training ourselves to do is to be present and to enjoy being present. So it's not that I'm training to listen all the time, although that's the way we phrase the practice we're doing, or I'm only going to be listening when I'm present to, when I can be present to listening. It's really about training ourselves to be present. Right? I watch all of the ways in which that's not possible, or that's I'm controlled so that does not happen, and I go unconscious. And in watching that, I can't go unconscious, I just have to be present. And how I do that with an attitude of play and fun makes life fascinating. Because no matter what commitment you choose, what you're choosing is always to be present.
The specifics of the commitment aren't as important as being present. And what I saw is that there was like this thing that happened where, you know, I was told that I had to be completely present in order to do, because I got talked into it by conditioning, I got talked into being unconscious. But when I put the earbuds in, that it would actually... I couldn't be unconscious for as long. Like, it would bring me back to my commitment.
Yes, because we want to be suspicious about something that says you can only listen to your recordings when you can be present to them, right? Who's making that decision? Who's saying you're being present to your recordings or not? But the point is you put on the earbuds no matter what you do, but you're training yourself to be present to the listening and not to a voice that's telling you either not to put on your earbuds or to wander off into distraction while you have your earbuds on listening to a recording.
Yeah, totally. And that just brings me back to the good news update and how, like, all of practice is like we're just putting on these different lenses to get a different perspective on these same processes. And I'm just so grateful to have found practice and to be with you all. So thank you.
Thank you, Ellie. It is truly a privilege for us to have actually, you know, it's the same thing we were talking to Todd about, that somehow or the other, the veil wasn't so thick, the barrier wasn't so thick, that the call to that, to home, was not muffled. You know, we could listen, we could hear it, we could respond to it, we could move towards it, we could be transformed in the process of moving towards it. And then here we are in such gratitude that we found a way to be with life and love and compassion and all of those things that make life happy and interesting and fascinating and just being present to it, right? Just learning how to be present to it.
Totally. Like just the kaleidoscope of everything that's happening right here.
Yes, the kaleidoscope of everything that's happening right here. And I love that choice of kaleidoscope because it is exactly like that, right? Patterns of brightly colored glass coming into focus as the wheels turn.
Yeah. So, awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
You're
Ellie.
Welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Ellie. Ashwini, I love that conversation also. And one of the things that jumped out for me was all of the different lenses through which we practice that Ellie mentioned, and I think Jen mentioned also. And what I saw about that is that, for me, there's karma that is tricky. But if I commit to practice, then I'm going to see that karma from every single lens. From what I see, from what you see, from what the guide sees, from what the other retreatant sees. And invariably, if I stick with it, it will all reveal itself.
Exactly. The kaleidoscope, you know, all the pieces come together and you see the pattern, right?
Yes.
Because it is all of those lenses. If you keep the metaphor going, it's all of those lenses that get constructed for us to see what is not a pattern, what's tricky for me.
Yes.
But it is the commitment to showing up for all of those ways that allows us to have that experience.
Yeah. Yes, exactly so. Exactly so. Ashwini, we're going to hear from our recording and listening program now, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation in conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini. Hello, Michael. It's Ramita in Charleston.
Hey, Ramita.
Hey, hello. Ramita.
Hello. I had a really quite an amazing experience a little while ago. I'm continuing to be in a really challenging life workshop. Life has given me quite a karmic-laden opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I hit a really rough spot this just a couple hours ago. And I was sitting with a person who's close to me and just was frightened and feeling alone and isolated and asked for help. And at the same time was moved to put my hand over my heart and just close my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. while the person was quote unquote helping me, inside, I mean, the voice is like, no, no, that's not what I want. This, you know, just all this resistance. We were just talking about the resistance that comes up. All this resistance to know, and my choice, instead of doing the karmic defending and engaging and moving away from the heart in order to basically be in conflict with this person I was asking for support from, I was able to stay with my heart, and the tears came, and I just let the whole thing melt. And it was transformative. It was one of those fruits of practice that, you know, the phrase, you know, burning away karma, doing mm-hmm. being with the pain instead of moving into another suffering pattern. It was just remarkable.
Mm-hmm. It's exquisite, isn't it? That you know, there's so much about it, right, Ramita? That to know that you are in a place where you're in a place that's challenging for you, that it's difficult circumstances, that what you need the most is assistance to go up against all that karmic resistance to asking for it, and to go with the heart instead. And you know, I've often heard Sherry say this, but it requires that difficult a circumstance for that karma to be burnt away. That's the gift in it, right? Because if it wasn't so challenging, would we allow ourselves to choose our heart?
I know what you mean. If it weren't so painful and so difficult, I could distract myself.
Yes.
With a relationship or some unconsciousness, mm-hmm. but the pain had all of my attention, and mm-hmm. and I mean literally physically putting my hands over my heart, I just feeling the mentor's presence and the mm-hmm. the strength of what is true beyond the superficially appearing.
Mm-hmm.
Situation, yeah. And to go to a deeper place and trust that whatever is going to happen is going to happen, whether it's tears mm-hmm. or who knows, and just to stay with yeah. myself through that. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and trust is just such an important aspect of it, right? That you can't, I've heard someone say that the only place of true intimacy is when trust exists. And most often, we don't trust life because we're surviving it, right? We're identified with the ego whose orientation is survival, not trust, right? Mm-hmm. The world is out mm-hmm. to get me, and I'm braced against it. And so I have to be on top of it, or, you know, whatever it is that's the facade that maintains that separation. And to be in a place where you're so in touch with your experience, you're so in touch with your heart that is what melts away the resistance for an intimacy, perhaps with the other person, but truly an intimacy of the human being with the intelligence that animates, right? That's the purest connection possible.
Yes, yes, that was the experience, this being loved and loving beneath the pain and the separation dissolved. It became really clear it had nothing to do with the other person. None of it had anything to do with the other person.
Yeah.
This was an opportunity for me.
Yeah, I project it was a very healing experience for you to be able to rest in the embrace of that which animates us, that wisdom, love, and compassion. To know that when you surrender, it will hold you.
Yeah.
I heard a priest talk once recently about how God comes to us not in our proudest moments, but our lowest ones. Because it's only then we are willing to release the I that says it can handle this and surrender to something beyond the I, right?
Oh, that resonates. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's the humility to say, I don't know. I don't know my way out of this. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. And then again, thank goodness for practice providing that trust and that foundation to say, you know, I've let go before and wonderful things are available. And it's safe to let go again.
And I don't know if this is your experience, Ramita, but my experience of that is that when the surrender happens, there is not even a premonition or anything of outcome. It's total surrender. It's like it doesn't matter. But what's going to happen is that I surrender me, right? I surrender my whatever it is, and there's a way in which not focusing on what will happen actually allows us to surrender even more completely. It's not a conditional surrender. That's what I was pointing at. It's an unconditional surrender, right? No matter what happens. That's true trust. There's no doubt in it. Ramita, did you go away? Michael?
Ashwini, looks like we just lost her.
Oh. Let's see if she comes back.
Okay. We'll just hold for a moment. I'll see if she comes back on. Oh, I think I see her.
Excellent.
Find her in the queue. Oh, there she is. Okay, Ramita, you're back?
I'm back.
Okay.
A metaphor for the experience, yes.
Oh, goodness. Oh, well, you were saying... I'll go back and listen to the recording, but the surrender
that it's unconditional. It's completely unconditional, right?
That's right. There's nothing left to resist. There's no I to say anything about outcome. It's just it's expansion at the same time as dropping into a depth, and it's like
And it happens when we can be so present to the pain. There's no separation at that point. Just these profound experiences of union.
All right. Well, I took an opportunity recently to do some of the undulations workshop, and an insight came, which is coming to mind now, is, you know, that we humans both want and resist permanence. You know, I want the good times to be permanent. I want the bad times to go away and not be permanent. And that's what gets in the way of me being with my pain. You know, and having to let go of that and just be in this moment that
Yeah, exactly. And the Buddha said it for us, right? The cause of suffering is the maintenance of me through avoidance and attachment.
Yeah.
Thank you. And that's so exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Ashwini.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Ramita. Ashwini, I was just recalling a line from The Key where Sherry talks about clinging to and pushing away being the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I read that, I was like, oh my goodness, what in the world? Really?
It's great.
Yes.
And I think Ramita said it really well. It's our struggle with the nature of life, right? With what is that I want? What I want everything to be fixed, or I want nothing to be fixed. I'm not willing to live in the impermanence of the undulation, things are how they are. They aren't determined by what I want or what I don't want.
Yes, exactly. Another paradox of Zen, there, huh?
Exactly.
And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rico.
Hey,
Rico. Hi,
Rico.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
So I was so touched by the previous caller. Just really touched me. And then what Michael had just said about clinging to or pushing away really opened the door for my, I had a question here or a comment, and I wasn't able to bring my body to the monastery, so I'm doing a fear retreat on my own. And I found a very, very old, dusty cassette tape by Sounds True of There's Nothing Wrong With You.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember exactly the phrase that I heard, but it became clear to me that fear has been central to my life since I was very, very sick as a kid and spent considerable time in hospitals just trying to stay alive. And then, I got to see that fear or fearlessness were two sides of the same coin.
Uh-huh.
In the same way as Michael just commented in the about the phrase and the key that clinging to fearlessness or avoiding fear, it's the same thing. And I had never seen that before, ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I say, wow, that's, and it defies registering in any of my logic channels.
Mm-hmm. I project because we're conditioned to believe that they're opposites, right? So if it's an inner duality, fear and fearlessness are opposites. And so how could they be the same thing? And I project what you're seeing is the process of fear and the process of fearlessness, if it's a conditioned process, is the same process.
It's and again, as you say that, my mind can't wrap itself around that at all on any level, and yet something rings true about that.
Yes, and that itself is something to be curious about, I project, Rico, which is why it's fascinating to you, because at the level of conditioned mind, it can understand one or the other side of the duality. It's a specific orientation. But you're tuning into a different process, which is the process of awareness, in which "and" is a word that is used more often than or, right? That there's a way in which things that are in opposition in the conditioned perspective or are mutually exclusive become totally inclusive. All and everything exists simultaneously and together. And so we can understand when we're tuned into life, into awareness, there's a way in which things make sense that when we're tuned into conditioned mind, they don't.
Amen to that. So I've obviously, or maybe not obviously, but on the Enneagram, I'm a fear type, and I get to see how surviving childhood illness created a viable strategy to get through that. And so all of my life, it's been coping with anxiety or near panic or outright terror, or getting on the other side of that and feeling not exactly triumphant or victorious or smug, but something like that.
And
what I'm seeing, in this moment, is I'm searching for the languaging of what I'm seeing in. It's almost as if you go to a dance, and
you go to a part. Say that again.
If you go to a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And if the music really, really touches you and makes your heart sing, it doesn't matter if I'm dancing with a person or dancing by myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the whole dance with fear as a primary Enneatype doesn't matter whether fear or anxiety is present or not. It's still the basic dance. And I'm seeing that, wait a second, it's possible to not buy a dance ticket, a dance card.
Exactly. That is just so very well stated, right? So that what you're tuning into is that the process of fear is independent of the content of fear, right?
Yes, exactly.
The reaction, whether it is fearlessness or whether it's whether you're afraid or not afraid, whether you're coping with fear or not having fear, the essentially you're always in the same process of fear. And as we say, ego is fear. Only that which is separate from life is afraid, right? So what you're pointing to is the I is the only constant. It's the I that's doing the identification with the process that is true in both cases. And so you have the choice of not avoiding it, or meaning, you know, thumbing your nose at it and going, I'm not afraid and I'm triumphant, or I'm coping with the anxiety. Neither of those two processes you need to engage with. You could just not buy that dance ticket and be with how it is.
Which sometimes is more challenging than others.
Oh, absolutely, right?
And it so I'm just remembering what the previous caller had to say. I says, wait a second, sometimes it's just the most difficult thing to stay seated. And
it is. Mm-hmm.
There's screaming voices and pressure saying, no, anything but staying here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm working with sort of a... I wouldn't call it a strategy, but it's kind of like an agreement with my. It's like my heart song saying, "Okay, it's really difficult to stay with this extreme moment of discomfort, but I'm going to breathe deeply 5 times and see where that brings me."
Mm-hmm. And what I project you're doing is situation, right? Because conditioning would make you.
I'm sorry, you cut out. I didn't hear that. Could you repeat that?
I said, what I project you're doing is bringing compassion into the process, right? Because conditioning would want to make it a contest.
Yes. Oh, it's not a contest. It's
right,
it's about,
and so it's. So, yes. So you bring. So I'm sorry. I don't know if you can hear me, Rico. But I was looking at. It's what we talk all about in meditation, right? That place of you come back to the breath with compassion and see how it is.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So again, that's really a good point because it's almost as well, and I suppose I grew up in a household like so many people where bringing home the trophies and the report cards was paramount to anything else. And so my worth at the dining table was measured by marks or whatnot, or achievements, not, wait a second, you know, that was really a loving thing to do, or you're a good guy, and no matter what you do or don't do, it's okay, and no, that didn't exist. And I'm seeing how that's very deep conditioning. That, oh yeah, even working with fear and anxiety can be do I have to get a report card?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're recognizing that the childhood conditioning to measure your worth on the basis of performance is operating in how you're working with fear, and that part of what I think we do as we get on the spiritual path is recognize that conditioning and then work towards that unconditional acceptance and love for the human being and the human incarnation, right? Which is where I think you're focused on, which is no matter what happens, I'm here with you. Your goodness is already established. Let's just take those five breaths and see what happens, and that your accomplishment doesn't determine the love I have for you.
Exactly. And what's also interesting is I have a recorded listening buddy who's close to my age, and we had our session yesterday, and I can't remember who went first, but we were exactly dealing with the same way of dealing with fear, anxiety, panic, terror. And my reflective listening buddy said something that I hadn't been aware of, and that is if I find a way to go beyond the fear for a day or two, and I feel better about myself, it's a setup for conditioning to come up and beat me up for when that, I would say, grace period ends and I'm struggling again. And I said, my goodness, I was unaware that I do the same thing.
Yes, and we don't notice that it's what the previous caller was talking about, undulations, that undulations are very natural in life, but we're conditioned to believe that this is preferable and this is not, and somehow I am the author of how I'm feeling, right?
That's the central belief, that I am the author of how I should be feeling.
That's right. And if you're not feeling good, then you're not, and if you connected that up to your conditioned karma of performance, then somehow there's something wrong with you if you can't turn in a better report card, no matter what the content is, right?
Exactly.
As opposed
to
recognizing that this is, you know, the pain comes and the pain goes, but the constant is the goodness is established and how much compassion can I bring to this circumstance?
That's so true, Ed. I had to reaffirm that very recently. I was having a really difficult moment in the middle of the night, and I felt this wave this most profound, overwhelming wave of compassion for the human. Mm-hmm. And and it's so different than the way I was raised by both my elders and when I was hospitalized, as to feeling deficient or feeling shame or feeling less than for having these strong feelings of of not well-being, of being really uncomfortable and struggling for breath, for example. But to have this most compassionate love for the human, even in this moment, made such a difference. And I felt a tear saying, wait a second, I'm the luckiest guy I've ever met, because I'm on a path called living compassion.
Yeah. Those are the moments that of grace that we are so grateful for, right? Because we experience what it is that we're doing all this work for. But I can feel unconditional love, period. And therefore, that is what this is, unconditional love. It's a movement from mentoring, from being mentored to the mentor, and recognizing the Buddha that does that resides within us, right? It's, that's the experience you're describing.
Yes, and it's one thing to be in the beauty of nature and to be touched by the grace of the planet and the grace to be alive on the planet and the grace to have a quiet moment to experience the beauty. And then it's another thing to be in, I don't want to call it a dark place, but I'll say it, a very fearful place, and to feel that same degree of profound joy and gratitude for being available to the beauty of the moment.
Yes, it is. There's nothing more powerful than feeling present and feeling love in circumstances which do not actually normally provoke that reaction, right?
Exactly.
Because
that's
true grace. It's true grace.
Well, I don't know, but I'm... And I said, we heard an earlier caller saying the fruit of practice sometimes takes years and decades, and just in maybe 2 minutes of it arising makes it all worth the the work and the intention, showing up and the trips to the monastery and recording and listening and the radio shows and all of it. It's
The transformation happens.
Well, that seems like a big word, but it just felt so supportive. And that support and that compassion and just made a big difference. Just really, so I bow in gratitude to all who help us to have this teaching available.
And bow in gratitude to the practitioner for whom that experience was made available and could receive it, right? We include everybody.
Amen to that. Well, I see.
Well, we miss you here, Rico, and we are keeping you in our hearts, and we'll be sending you some recordings. So,
I feel so grateful for that, and blessings to all, and gassho to all.
Deep gratitude.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Rico.
You're welcome. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. And Ashwini, we are at the top of the hour here.
Time flies. When
time
we're practicing.
Flies. When we're practicing and expanding and laughing and getting present.
Crying.
Thing.
Laughing and crying.
Yeah, all together. all together.
Yeah.
And so thank you so much for being here tonight. I really enjoyed that.
Thanks a lot, Michael. You take care.
Okay, you too. Good night.
Good night.